Match Day 8 brought some big winners and also, of course, the big losers. Welcome to All Talk, All USL Talk USL, covering all the latest scores, news, and developments in the second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system, the USL Championship. I'm your host, as always, Vince Galvano. It's episode 10, match day 8. Can you believe it? The double digits for the episodes. I'm so happy to have made it already this far. Time has flown by. I've learned a lot already making these 10 episodes. But I have a really, really big ask for everyone, one of the listeners out there. And I usually talk about this at the end of the show, but I want to change and we'll flip it, talk about it here at the beginning of the show, because Talk USL is also about going on a journey with all of you listeners out there, and that journey is not possible without your feedback. And I'm really curious to know any of your thoughts on the show. What are you enjoying about it? Would you like to see more of? I'm curious of your listening habits, how you found out about the show, anything you want to talk about, or if you want to ask me questions on what you might have for me and what you want me to discuss a bit more of, please write at me, talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. I'm checking the inbox several times throughout the week. But you can also just reach out to me on social platforms as well, usually everywhere at TalkUSL. And as always, if you want to support the podcast, give a review, whatever platform you're listening to, just make sure to tell your fellow friends, family, and most importantly, fellow USL fans to give it a listen. This is something I would really appreciate it now that we made it 10 episodes, plenty to go off of, and plenty to actually look forward to as well as we work towards making something special and going on this journey together. The USL has been taking and running its course on its own journey this season. And as I said in the beginning of the show, big winners, big losers. This reminds me of a recent episode we'd done several weeks back where we had clear winners and clear losers in terms of a whole match day where there were no draws. This time we get it not just once, but twice this season. But we have some ridiculous score lines, a lot of goals, but also some upsets. There were big winners in match day 8. Some of them already we know, right? I'm talking big winners. Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Let's just start there. They got their first win of the season. Detroit City FC loses their first game of the season, and they lost it in big fashion to Pittsburgh Riverhounds Soccer Club. I mean, you wouldn't think, right? But hey, man, this season is a bit unpredictable. Some things are predictable, some things aren't. Some score lines here, definitely not. And you want to talk about also big winners. Man, Memphis 901 getting the win against Birmingham, you know? We can talk about, geez, Miami FC getting back to winning ways. But in any case, what we'll do, as always, we'll have a nice match day spotlight. Finally had the chance to check out Charleston Battery, see what the hype is about, and the solidarity of the team so far. And it came through. It shone quite brightly in their 6-0 victory against Las Vegas Lights. So that will be the match day spotlight. We'll talk as well last week's goal of the week, always the breakdown of all the fixtures. And yeah, we'll preview next week ahead and look at the table to see where we are at after 8 match days. In any case, the goal of the week for match day 7, we discussed it last time around. It was also number 6 on the SportsCenter top 10. That was Juan David Torres for Charleston, that when the Colombian struck from inside the center circle with that incredible Arsing finish that proved to be actually the game winner for the Battery in their victory on the road in Tulsa. So that is, I think, was about like 43% of the votes out of all the 4 options that you had. Torres comes along and scoops up that top goal for last match day 7. Charleston Battery, Las Vegas Lights. Let's get into it. Prior, as we always know, in terms of, hey, what did USLChampionship.com tell us in terms of the players to watch out for prior to the season? I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Las Vegas and Charleston there. Perhaps we can start with Las Vegas. There's only 2 players for Las Vegas. I think we'll start with Charlie Adams. Interestingly enough, I mean, when they talk about a player to watch in the midfield, also a new joiner, Charlie Adams, in case you didn't know, this player for Las Vegas, this is his 10th season in the league, which is quite astonishing. He has experience in the third division in Austria, as well as League Two in England. But he's only played in three games so far this season. He put up a nice, decent performance against Rhode Island, but he did have an injury in warm-ups in the season opener against Memphis. So the 29-year-old Englishman, in any case, joined Las Vegas this past offseason after a successful four-year stint with San Diego Loyal. And it's that ability to find the right pass, keep side moving, that might be Adams' most valuable. And in addition to his leadership qualities, that make him a great candidate for a club captain and an important element as the side looks to pull its new pieces together. Some of those new pieces being pulled together, as we know, from the acquisition of the Major League Baseball All-Star Jose Bautista. Big, big acquisition. He's a six-time All-Star and now putting his cards into the soccer business with the acquisition of Las Vegas Lights, quite prominent spokesperson and obviously being one of the owners of the club. But he also mentions in terms of acquisitions, you have the 20-year-old Dominican Republic international Edison Ascona, who joined the club from Inter Miami Club Football to start what would be a big year ahead in his career. Ascona's loan agreement has an option for Lights to acquire him permanently in July. And so far, he's had one assist against FC Tulsa and that 1-3 loss. But he's also won quite a bit of duels for a center midfielder. 12 duels so far this season. That's in the 97th percentile compared to other CMs. But he commits a lot of fouls. He wins a lot of fouls, commits a lot of fouls. 3 yellow cards so far this season. 7 committed in 4 games, but 14 fouls won in 4 games. He wasn't starting this time around against Charleston. Speaking of which, a couple of the names shouted out prior to the season starting, and I'm always curious because USL Championship, they put these, the website puts these, you know, players to watch, new joiners, midfielders, defenders, and so on. So it's curious to see, so far in the season, has some of the names rung true in terms of who to look out for, but we've also seen some names where they just haven't been playing as much as anticipated. And three of the players that were shouted out were Augustine Williams, Sierra Leone forward, Aaron Malloy, as we all know, and also Graham Smith. Just from that list of the three players, I mean, Malloy and Smith really taking a lot of what's going on. But Augustine Williams, not really in terms of, because we have MD Myers really starting for Charleston so far this season. Graham Smith, though, 720 minutes played, 8 games, 8 starts, averaging 1 shot as a defender per game, which is actually in the 86th percentile. He was the 2022 All-League player as well for the USL Championship and was part of the 901 FC surges up to the Eastern Conference in the past 3 seasons. Yeah, including, like I said, that 2022 Championship All-League honors when it finished 2nd in the Eastern Conference. So he was shouted out. And then we also have, of course, a name synonymous with Charleston Battery, especially this season, is the Irish international Aaron Malloy. He's been man of the match already in 2 matches, according to FUTMob, in the March 24th bout, 4-0 victory against New Mexico United, as well as in the season opener, that 0-0 draw against North Carolina. And he's actually in the 99th percentile of players who touches the ball the most, and the 94% in terms of chances created compared to other central midfielders. Consecutive championship All-League first-team selections, and was also a 2022 player of the year nomination. In any case, all of which, right, is why his arrival at the Charleston Battery this offseason, reuniting him with the head coach, Ben Pearman, who previously worked with Malloy at Memphis. It's a significant move that's been paying off dividends so far this season. And I mean, talk about Battery aiming to be a consistent challenger in the USL Championship after, you know, the return to prominence last season and winning the Eastern Conference. There's no player, maybe you could say, better player to build around. That's what the website talks about. And it rings true so far. And I really enjoyed watching Aaron Malloy. We'll break down his performance as well as the rest of the game. But prior to going into Charleston Battery and Las Vegas Lights match day spotlight, Las Vegas were 7th in the West. They had 3 wins and 4 losses. They scored in 7 straight games. And this is, you know, a tremendous improvement when you look about that the team only made 3 wins last season. But poor form heading into this one, we could say, back-to-back losses against Monterey Bay, as well as Rhode Island. So they're traveling to Charleston here. Charleston, though, undefeated, one of those undefeated teams, maintaining that rank in the Eastern Conference, first in the Eastern Conference with the most games played, 5 wins, 3 draws, and you want to talk about form, winning 4 out of their last 5 heading into the match prior to playing Las Vegas. It was David Gascoigne on the call with Marion Crowder, the former Georgia Bulldog. We'll get also talking a little bit about their coverage of the game as well. But in any case, it was a 4-1-2-1-2 for Las Vegas. Valentin Noel, who scored the opening goal of the 2024 USL campaign, playing that attack and midfield role. For Las Vegas, Charlie Adams was playing as well. And then for Charleston Battery, you have that simple 4-2-3-1. They do it really well, that formation. And Aaron Malloy with next to Allen in the midfield, MD Myers up top. And of course, we'll talk about him a lot, Nick Markanic, big player on the right midfield slot for Charleston Battery. So it was a nice Saturday afternoon at Patriots Point, 73 degrees, according to the call. And they have a really nice grass field. Looked a bit dry, but hey, didn't stop both sides. They loved playing the ball on the ground. Completely different from what we saw last week when we watched Detroit in the match day spotlight. You had the nice Volvo sponsor boards right in the middle of the park. No, there wasn't electronic sponsor boards, just simple sponsor boards, but Volvo was everywhere. You know, Volvo cars getting caught in traffic, but you also had a lot of foot traffic going on in the beginning of the game in the main stands. It seems like the game was going on, but just other activities were taking place in the far right corner. You also had on the right side the beautiful, you could see it, thank God we had clear skies watching this one. The Arthur Ravenel Jr. Bridge was in sight on the right side. It reminds me similar to Philadelphia Union's home stadium that you can see the bridge from pretty much the main cam, and this is the case as well. If you get a pretty much zoomed out main cam for Charleston Battery, you see that beautiful bridge in sight, and a lot of people in this one, about 4,500 in Patriots Point, at Patriots Points, I should say. What's interesting is just that there was so much stuff going on prior to the game starting. It took about like 15 minutes for the fans to really fill up the main stand. And then on the left side, you had the small stands with the ultras, just a couple of hardcore fans going at it with their drums, with their smoke, with their Charleston colors, which was nice to see. And a good ambiance. It looked like a great day for some soccer. And we got some nice soccer in this game. Both sides playing, actually having good spells of possessions and so forth. We start anyway in the second minute. Las Vegas, Asante getting the ball on the right and playing it across to Alba, but just couldn't reach it. Las Vegas started the game. It was a scare early on for the Battery. It was like, oh my goodness, that could have been just not what you have expected, right? Las Vegas to take the lead so early on could have been the case there with Asante getting that ball, but to Alba, but just couldn't reach it. But in the third minute, if it was already 1-0 for Charleston, Ikaza took a nice touch. He skips Markanic through, who curls it with his left foot around a Rosarena, the goalkeeper for Las Vegas. So quickly, just like that, you thought Las Vegas could be up, and then all of a sudden, you want to talk about a response. There's a goal opening 5 minutes, and it's Nick Markanic, his 8th of the season. And the yellow smoke going on beyond the left side of the bleachers. Like I said, the very, very small but mighty ultras, we can say. They had a nice flag up there. They had saying Vamos Charleston. And yeah, the drums were going quite well, especially in the second half. It just kind of felt like, for me, the opening 5 minutes was resemblant of any EAFC or FIFA game, if you ever played it, when like you don't take an opportunity that's right there. It's like the game gives the opponent an easy goal. And that's kind of what I was thinking of when Charleston came back in terms of a response against Las Vegas from the opening chance. In the 7th minute, Las Vegas, nice in and out balls on the ground and then spreading it wide and low crosses in. Samake getting up the field on the left side. Las Vegas, I think they also appreciated the nice grass field at Patriots Point, and they were just moving the ball quite well. And then in the opening 10 minutes, you saw right away why Aaron Malloy gets so many touches on the soccer ball. He fills the spaces so nicely when the team is in possession. I'm talking, you know, dropping and occupying a center half position to allow those side backs to push up in the 4-2-3-1. He just like is a support specialist and just so calm, cool, and collected on the ball. I mean, he does this nice thing where he just like he fakes going left, but he pushes the ball with the right outside of his foot so elegantly. And it's a simple thing that just practice. It reminds me of like Andrea Pirlo when he has that touch where like he bends his left knee, but then it looks like he's going to go to his right, but then he goes to his left. Aaron Molloy pretty much has a similar thing just with the outside of his right foot where like you think he's going to take a touch on the inside of his right, but instead he just kind of fakes it and then pushes it out. And he did it twice and it always just opened up space for a pass and just gave himself that 45 degree safe angle that a defender really couldn't take the ball because he protected it so well. And then he could just lay off the goalkeeper, another center back, side back, and so forth, just to maintain possession. Maybe my only critique of watching him play, maybe it was because the opening 10 minutes of the game, he wanted to get warmed up, is he doesn't need to run as much off the ball. And I mentioned Pirlo, and Andrea Pirlo, when watching, he mastered the slow jog, right? Just kind of bouncing on the toes, waiting for the ball to be played for him, because, you know, if you have good enough players around you that play with the ball at a solid pace, you don't need to run as much as a center midfielder. Nonetheless, I mean, and this is no discredit to Aaron Molloy, just Nancy nitpicking here, but also at the same time, it could have just been warming up. The adrenaline could have been going in the opening 10 minutes, right? Something I noticed. 13th minute, Las Vegas. They anticipated the passing patterns of Charleston quite well. I'm talking reading those 50-50s and getting the ball back and then maintaining it, you know, keeping possession. I'm talking like when Segbers had the ball on the right side for Charleston, sometimes would struggle in the sense of, you know, not knocking the ball forward, but you know, trying to play a square ball, getting picked off, or when Grinwis had it, the goalkeeper had to go long because there was some good organized pressure in the final third for Las Vegas against Charleston. So I was thinking, hey, maybe Las Vegas, they can get a hold of this and then start getting into the game. And speaking of getting into the game, 15 minutes in, the stands are quite occupied. Bleachers are now almost full after what was a lot of foot traffic, a lot of other things going around. And I get it, 73 degrees, nice day. Families out and about watching the game at Patriots Point. Great day to spend a Saturday watching soccer, especially if you were a Charleston fan. But, I mean, 15 minutes in, also 62% possession for Las Vegas, so they were moving the ball quite well. Not what you would expect from a team with only 3 wins from last season, right? But there's a bit more of jive there, at least from these opening 15 minutes. And then the 17th minute, Las Vegas almost snapping the ball from Segbers on the right back for Charleston. You know, and I think in the 21st minute, it was funny because I don't think that Segbers should have had a foul. It was off of a press from Valentin Noel, but he managed just to give the referee something to blow his whistle about. But finding success pressing that right side. But in any case, you would think, hey, Las Vegas, they're coming into it. They're getting possession. They're playing the ball around. But this Charleston Batteries team is a well-oiled machine. I give them credit. In 23rd minute, MD Myers gets a goal to make it 2-0 for Charleston. And 70, Samake just had a bad pass off balance after a header that was flicked on, falls into the space left behind. The left back comes in, Samake, for Las Vegas. He goes to play the ball back to the keeper. He struggles since, with his right foot. We've seen him so strong so far with his left, making some nice crosses in the opening 20 minutes. And it gets picked off big time by Markanic. Markanic then squares it to MD Myers. And it's 2-0 Charleston, who takes a touch. You know, it was nice. MD Myers maybe panicked a little bit. He took a touch and then scored it on an empty net, but he had enough time to take a touch and put the finish. There was concern for Markanic since he collided with the Vegas keeper, but he shakes it off. And already 25 minutes into the game, it's 2-0 Charleston. And it was just indicative. You talk about a team that's first place in the Eastern Conference, and I think we'll talk a little bit more as we go along and we dissect each of these goals, but they make you pay for your mistakes. 25th minute, Las Vegas had some more success with their pressing. Good response from the second goal. They had an Alba header from a Samake cross on the left side. So the strategy really going forward, or where they can really find success, Las Vegas was on the flanks with some nice crosses. The middle of the park was so compact. It was full of Charleston bodies. So, I mean, really, you talk about the only way you can get around it is going on the wings and seeing if you can play some nice crosses in. At the half an hour mark, Markkanen would make it 3-0 with a brace in the first 30 minutes. Arozarena, the goalkeeper for Las Vegas, and Garcia having a mix-up with his fellow teammates, his center back and the goalkeeper. There was a hooking ball up the line from Charleston. Garcia, Arozarena do not communicate well. They collide into each other in addition to some pressing Charleston players, and somehow the ball ends up conveniently to the left foot of Markkanen, who just curls one in from outside the box to an empty net with no goalkeeper, and it's just like that, 3-0 for Charleston. Arguably game, set, and match, really, at this point. And you know, Las Vegas, they found success with playing the ball out wide after some midfield passes, but it was just threading the needle with inside that compact 4-2-3-1 formation of Charleston that was never really present over the course of the game. And they had an opportunity right after this goal. I mean, in the 33rd minute, Gannon, he received it at the top of the box. And it's like he does everything he can to ensure it gets wide to Asante, because that's, of course, how it's been working so far. They've been finding some success with crosses. However, you know Asante's out there. See if he can, right? Look up, see if he can have the shot first. See if there's something in the inside, as opposed to rushing the ball to get it out wide to Asante, because you'll never know. If you can attack at the throat of the team, the center of the park, might find more success. But they just kind of felt, and Charleston were so compact to their credit, just felt it's convenient. This is what we've been doing. This is kind of my intention with the ball. I'm not going to see what I have, but I know that he's out there. Let's get this ball wide and see if we can get into the box. Great. Totally understand. Look up. Is there an opportunity if you can go towards the center of the park prior to then going out wide? In the 35th minute, penalty kick given away by Las Vegas midfielder JC Ngando, the Frenchman. He does the typical two hands up, you know, prior to putting in the tackle, and then stabs at the ball with his left foot, doesn't get the ball, and instead gets the man, and it's Markkanen who's going to step up to the spot 12 yards out, and he just puts a left-footed strike with power. Keeper guesses right, but to no avail. Markkanen gets his hat trick. It's 4-0 prior to the first half even finishing, and we already have our player of the game spotlight. Without a doubt, spotlight player of the game. That's Markkanen. Big time. The fact that he's able to get an opening hat trick in the first half so quickly, taking his tally up to 10 goals at this moment in time, but he wouldn't be finished. He'll actually get another goal later on in the game, which is just astonishing to get 4 goals in one game, but celebrating his third already. 4-0 Charleston. You want to talk about game, set, match? Absolutely done at this point. But Las Vegas, Alba getting a header close to the left post in the 39th minute, 3 minutes after. It was quite astonishing. Like, every time that Charleston scored, just like 2 or 3 minutes afterwards, Las Vegas had some sort of chance. And I think in the 39th minute, Alba had the best chance for Las Vegas out of the entire game. Would have been nice, some consolation prize prior to heading to the first half break, but didn't find its way into the back of the net. Instead, sailed to the left side of the post. In the 40th minute, JC Ngando, the Frenchman who gave away the penalty kick, he drives forward well, but his shot is safe in the hands of the Charleston goalkeeper, Grinwiz. But Ngando had some nice skill in the 42nd minute as well, popping the ball over Malloy's head. And there was times where he can drive forward, like he can dribble the ball and have some successful carries. JC Ngando, the midfielder, had actually, looking at the stats for the game, had about five successful dribbles in the match, in 83, at 5 out of 6, so 83% of his dribbles were successful. Which was quite interesting to see from the 24-year-old Frenchman. that midfielder could be dangerous for Las Vegas going forward, but obviously making the mistake with giving away the penalty. In the 43rd minute, there was another sloppy pass back, and Charleston's Myers gets on and tries to hit it with the outside of his boot, but Arozarena gets a nice hand on it, and then the save actually parries to the post, and the post then goes out for a corner, so he has the post to help him out, but it gets enough of a hand on it. Could have been even 5-0 for Charleston heading into the break. In the 47th minute, Charleston, M.D. Myers, he gets the ball to his back, and he just plays it so nicely to Torres, and then Torres has a nice double scissors, hits a nice shot, but then it's saved by Arozarena. So Arozarena was getting some saves towards the end of the first half to just not, or I should say, to ensure that the game doesn't go to 5 or 6 prior to the first halftime break. But very nice play from M.D. Myers. I think there's a good blend of players in this Charleston side, which is, you know, why they're first place. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Gonzalo Higuain, like just able to get the ball with his back to the goal, the top of the, we could say the halfway circle, right? And then within seconds, milliseconds, spraying it out wide so nicely off the touch. And when you have players like Torres on the outside, Markanic, things can get ugly, and Torres does that nice double scissor there. So, you know, the first half of the match, that's really what it ended in, 4-0. The game's already over. Charleston Battery, right, demonstrating a nice, strong performance. Markanic being key. A hat trick in 36 minutes. Las Vegas had some success playing the ball out wide after some midfield passes. I mean, they also had more of the possession going into the end of the first half. But Charleston's defense, that 4-2-3-1, quite compact, remaining strong. Las Vegas had, you can even say, a few close attempts on goal. Alba getting the header close to left post at the 39th minute mark. And Gondo responding well, giving away the penalty kick. But then he started to take some responsibility, drove forward with some dribbles, and also had a shot. But it was comfortably in the hands of the Charleston keeper, like I said. And the first half ended pretty much with Charleston leading the match, obviously, right? But winning the match as well. So we'll see what happens in the second half, you know. A little bit less paid attention going on, and in the second half we get some actual, we can say, some surprises, or really putting up the bow on this one in the present that Charleston players gave their fans in attendance. The foot traffic was back for the second half, seen in the first corner for Las Vegas in the 46th minute. Just seems like a lot going on at Patriots Point. I'm very interested to see what the extra, maybe it's just a lot of walking in terms of getting around. But maybe it's also good vibes going on outside the field. I'm curious to know what some of the activities were, because it seemed like others were just enjoying the 73-degree weather, walking around, but they would find their seats eventually. But for those that found their seats early in the second half, they were gifted with a fourth goal from Nick Markanic, and he found himself on an ocean. When I say an ocean, in ocean. I think this was probably the easiest goal for me out of the four that he scored. Or maybe just because he makes it look so easy. But the ball's in the middle of the field. Meyer gets on. He finds Torres in the layoff, something that we've seen already in the first half. And there's just no left back. Like, I have no idea what happened to Samaki. I don't know if he was pushing forward from the corner kick or before. I don't know in terms of getting a ball back. But Markanic gets on it, and he just takes a touch and does the damage with the left foot. And so nonchalant with his celebration after scoring 4. Clementa, 23 for Las Vegas center back. When the pass was made over to a wide open Markanic, he was just so confused to see him out there. It's like he had no idea. But hey, you got to understand that also, who's ever responsible for also getting your left back in the position, or maybe he was told to start pushing forward higher up the field in the second half. They just seemed so confused about what was going on, and Charleston, for the third time, making them pay for it. In the 53rd minute, Charleston, you want to talk about 6-0 here. Malloy plays to Graham Smith, but it's a foot save and a rebound that was blocked. That was coming from a corner kick. And then the next corner right after that goes straight off the crossbar. But in the 57th minute, we'd see 3 subs being made for Las Vegas. Bennett, Nigro, and Gyal all coming on for them. And in the 60 minutes, we had Olays already happening with the possession. That's when we really know the game's over. I mean, an hour mark, Charleston were actually starting to string some passes together, and the crowds was definitely getting into it. Nick Mrkonjac would also get subbed off shortly after this. He pocketing four goals, so that puts him on 11 for the season. And Wilson Harris will certainly be worried for the Golden Boot. Stats for the Golden Boot, yeah. Stats as of an hour, I mean, you had 55% possession for Las Vegas, having about 111 passes in the opposition half, as opposed to only 85 from Charleston. But you talk about shots on target. Charleston 7, Las Vegas 1. This is only within the hour. And Charleston hitting the post twice. Expected goals were 2.29 for Charleston's chances, and they are already 6-0 up. In the 65th minute, Las Vegas had some nice one-on-one defending shown by Matthew Dean, one of the substitutes for Las Vegas, coming in that left side, arguably, you know, ironically, we should say. And he did a really nice job defending one-on-one. And in the 82nd minute, we can have, I think, safe to say, already the goal of the week. An absolute howler from Aaron Malloy. Segbers, the right back, lays him off so nicely on the right side. And he absolutely just smacks this from outside the box with such velocity and conviction that it just curls and dips into the far side of the goal. It reminded me of a goal, and you should take a look, Charleston fans, or if you were watching this game, Granit Xhaka for Bayer Leverkusen, who are also your Bundesliga titles, right? Snapping the streak of Bayern Munich for the first time in 11 years. Granit Xhaka, though, Swiss international, a big part in that, scoring a few goals throughout the season, but one of the goals he scored was eerily similar to Aaron Malloy's against Mainz, except from the opposite sides, and Granit Xhaka is a lefty. When you just hit it so hard that the goalie doesn't expect it, but it curls so nicely and then dips into the far side of the net. So as soon as I went in, I was like, that reminds me of a goal that I saw recently that took place this year as well in the top five leagues in Europe. Aaron Malloy was grinning ear to ear. Let me tell you something. He looked so happy and fulfilled from that strike. And I don't blame him. When you score something like that, you deserve to be smiling. And that was a gift. That was it, really. I mean, it's 6-0. This game was game set match from 30 minutes afterwards. And it's no doubt that Charleston Battery are top of the Eastern Conference when you watch performances like this. They're like the loan sharks, ensuring that you pay for your mistakes. And that's so key for a team to be on top. And Johan Cruyff said it, right? Football is a game of mistakes. Whoever makes the fewest mistakes wins. Charleston's a team that they don't make a lot of mistakes. And they run a 4-2-3-1 that is just concrete, but somehow manages to score goals. And I think a lot of those goals come from really preying on the mistakes that other teams make and making sure they pay for them. But they also have a really nice blend of players everywhere. I think you can mention Chris Allen into that. He was everywhere. He was a machine. And it just to have Allen and Malloy in front of you in a back line, those tucked in two center defensive midfielders, you know, as a defender, it's great. You know, you had those two in front of you, but also in possession, life is easy for them because they just occupy the spaces so well in terms of knowing where to be and supporting the players around them. So if you had to ask me, hey, where are Charleston Battery weak? I think if you play a 4-4-2 against them or a 4-1-4-1, I think back to, you know, and look to cancel them. I think back to when Chelsea found some success against Man City and not winning the game, but really causing a stir the last couple bouts, where you had, it was, I think, Conor Gallagher marking Rodri in the Man City match. I think something you can do similar here, just having a 4-4-2 formation, having one of your midfielders for the team that's good offensively, good defensively, good all around, right? Just having them shadow Aaron Malloy in the defensive areas so that he doesn't get on the ball can really take the rhythm out of the Charleston Battery side. Look to force the ball to the side backs under pressure and then have them either play back or play sideways and then just disrupting flow of the game, making sure the ball goes out of bounds, taking your time with these sort of things. More stop and go. I think a team like Detroit, especially at home. And I think they play June 15th against Charleston Battery. Just from watching that game and watching this game for the Spotlight Games of the Week, would be a very interesting bout. Like, how Charleston Battery would cope with that. Would Detroit find, you know, more success there? But I think it just ultimately comes down, right, who makes less of mistakes, as Johan Cruyff said with his famous quote, and who makes you pay for those mistakes? And why Charleston Battery is so successful is just they're a team that is lethal in front of net. It's easier said than done, right? And when you talk about trying to beat them. But a statement of a win from Charleston, and for those 4,500 in attendance, sure is a great way to spend their Saturday. From Las Vegas' side, they perform, and I know it's 6-0, but they can take away. They had a couple of nice spells of possession, played quick. They had the ball on the ground. They enjoyed Patriots point for the field that it was. They pressed well at certain times, a couple times in the beginning of the first half, gained the ball back on several occasions in the offensive third. But defensive shape and reactions from either hooking balls, you know, just not safe enough. I think they can play safer. And I don't know, I don't think Arozarena will be the goalkeeper next time around. I can't see him starting the next match unless the second string is incapable for whatever reason. But yeah, I in terms of players I was impressed with from this game in particular, despite giving up the penalty, and Gondo, the Frenchman, the 24-year-old, I liked watching him play. 5 out of 6 successful dribbles. He could carry the ball in the midfielder. For me, he should have a license to be even more selfish out there, especially in the attacking third, driving past midfielders, drawing players out of positions, right? That's what they can use more of, this Las Vegas side. Someone in the midfield to just say, yeah, I'll take this game. And I'm going to take some guys on. And hey, you know, try things in the offensive third. I understand you want to get it wide. I understand Charleston's quite compact in the middle of the field. But you got to do something quite special to then draw them out of their shape. They're threading the needles, which I think they can do as well, these nice passes. But also one-on-ones and so forth. Trying to win those battles with dribbling. And Ngando could be key to that. But maybe they also, for me as well, I mean, they could use a solid anchor in the midfield, I think, to give people like Asante and Ngando more permissions to join the attack. Valentin Noel, from what I saw, had good rapport with Samaka on the left side. He didn't really get into the dangerous offensive position, but that's credit to Battery's defensive shape, compact, right, centrally, hard to get in there. And you want to get touches on the ball. It's easier to go outside of the field just to get a flow in the game, get on the ball, and link up with your side backs in this sort of narrow midfield that you have, right, where the side backs have to also join the attack as well. But I think if they just haven't gone to, I think he was playing the holding mid, or he was switching between Adams throughout the game. They can have him playing one of the CMs in that, where like he can go forward a little more, a little higher up the field. Maybe he can also add some goals to his repertoire as well. I'm just taking a look in terms of his stats. All right, he's got 1 assist so far. And that assist came against San Antonio when they had the 1-0 victory back in early April. But that's kind of areas where I see Las Vegas in terms of improvement or takeaways from this game in particular. A really fun match day spotlight, pretty much a bit longer, but a lot of goals to cover from that. And yeah, we'll move on to some of the other games. Talk about big winners, big losers. Phoenix Rising being one of the big winners from this match day 8. Rhode Island being, we can say, a loser. Unfortunately, their first home loss of the season, which is, you would have liked to have seen it more, right? Considering they're a new team, you know, they have a really passionate home fan base. Everything's quite new. The energy is quite high. I mean, 4,000 in attendance at Burns Stadium for this one. But Phoenix Rising triumphing with a 3-1 win and improving their season record to 3-4-1. 2 goals, a brace scored by Remy Cabral, and Fede Varela netted his first of the season. So that was making the victory a nice 2-goal triumph. Emil Coelho, Panis Armenakis, and Gabby Torres each had assists in the win. Despite even a penalty kick awarded to Rhode Island, you talk about Phoenix goalkeeper stepping up, the Argentine Rocco Rios Novo. He made a nice save in the 42nd minute to keep his team in the lead going into the halftime. And the match concluded right with that 3-1. That was really the Daily Independent covering a little bit of Phoenix there, of that recap. But yeah, it was his second penalty kick save of the season for Rocco Rios Novo. The 21-year-old Argentine also had a PK save in the 1-0 victory against New Mexico United. So Phoenix have yet to register two consecutive wins this season, off and on performances. But can this be the one that pushes them in a better direction? I mean, they play Sacramento at home next time around. Big game for Rhode Island next time around as well. They face their table partners, North Carolina FC, both of them sitting at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Goals here goal here for Rhode Island. That was from Holstad in the 89th minute, too few, too late. And Varela would come back in the 90th minute after to just ensure it. Yeah, it's 3-1. Indy 11 taking on North Carolina FC. This one would end 2-1 in favor of the host Indy 11. 10,000 in attendance for this one. 4 shots on target for North Carolina. 2 shots on target for Indy 11. Yeah, 2 goals, 2 shots, not quite. Maldonado had an own goal for North Carolina in favor of Indy, giving them the lead in the 48th minute. But Perez would bring it back to 1-1. For North Carolina in the 51st minute, but Martinez would seal the deal in the 75th in terms of those big chances that would go to Indy 11. This one would be, yeah, Indy 11 getting the 3 points, and North Carolina getting another loss, unfortunately. Miami FC, big winners this time around. They took on San Antonio FC, and they emerged victorious with that 2-1 scoreline. Despite an initial setback, we could say from a goal by San Antonio in the 11th minute by Hackinson, Miami FC, they maintained a resilient stance. They dominated, you can say, the majority of the game as well. The turning point really coming in the 25th minute when Frank Lopez passed the ball to Luzinho, who scored the equalizing goal. And then the decisive moment in the 45th minute when recent signee Michael Lawrence, who was playing his debut match, he scored the winning goal, taking Miami FC back to winning ways. To win a big, significant one, you wrap up the month of April on a positive note. Their next match for Miami is scheduled away against Pittsburgh before they return home to face Indy 11. That was a news release from Miami FC. So the first win since opening day for Antonio Nocerino's side. San Antonio, on the other hand, they return home next time around, hosting an out-of-form Oakland Roots. So that's Miami 2, San Antonio FC 1. Big wins, big losses, right? Detroit City, they were on hot form heading into Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh were starting to get familiar with themselves again, picking up the pieces of the losses that they were experiencing early on in the season. And they'd say, yeah, we'll hand Detroit their first defeat of the season at Highmark Stadium, in front of 6,000 fans. Approximately, it's goals from Hogan and Griffin in the 35th, with a penalty, Hogan in the 20th. Only one shot on target all game, according to FUTMAP stats, for Detroit City FC. They were also quite, you could say, frustrated towards the end. Stephen Carroll getting the red card in the 90th plus 6 minute. So they also have next match without their starting center back. So that will be interesting to see if they can get back to winning ways. So that's 5 wins and obviously the first loss for Detroit this season. But they still maintain third place in the Eastern Conference. Birmingham Legion hosting Memphis 901 at Protective Stadium. This was the Southern Harm Derby. Bruno Lapa starred as Memphis 901 FC picked up a 3-0 victory over Birmingham Legion. The result ending 901 FC's 5-match losing streak in league play. Memphis controlling most of the match, with Bruno Lapa opening the scoring just 4 minutes in. Lucas Tursi further extended the lead with a remarkable goal despite Birmingham managed 15 shots with actually 6 on target. 901 FC's defense held strong. Goalkeeper Tyler Derrick making 6 crucial saves. Memphis created 3 clear-cut chances and capitalized on all of them. Bruno Lapa, former Legion FC midfielder himself, creating a clear-cut chance and finishing off a move with a clinical finish back in the 54th minute to secure the 3-0 win for Memphis. This victory marks Derek's and 901 FC's first clean sheet of the season. They now sit 10th in the Western Conference with 6 points and a goal differential of -2. Memphis scheduled to return home and face the unbeaten Tampa Bay Rowdies on May 5th. That's from Caleb Hilliard of ABC 24. Louisville City FC 6, Hartford Athletic 0. 6 different goal scorers. And are you surprised? Because I am certainly, none of them being Wilson Harris. Instead, you had Winder scoring in the 5th minute, Perez in the 12th, McFadden in the 32nd, Gonzalez in the 67th, Serrano in the 83rd, and then Shawunmi, the 90th minute, plus 3 stoppage time. So Wilson Harris not on the scoreboard, ironically, in front of the 10,000, almost 11,000 fans in attendance at Lynn Family Stadium. A mauling of a display against Hartford. I think this is one of the worst defeats in club history for Hartford Athletic. I was trying to do the research, trying to find something from the past. I had to go all the way back to September of 2020 when Hartford Athletic lost 5-0 to Pittsburgh in the shortened 2020 season. Wilson Harris will be happy his team won, maybe a bit disappointed that he didn't get on the scoreboard since Markanic is now 4 goals ahead of him in terms of the goal scoring leading charts in the USL Championship. But wow, emphatic win from Louisville City. Tampa Bay maintaining their unbeaten streak with a 3-0 victory against New Mexico at Al Lang Stadium in front of about 6,500 people. Don't sleep on Tampa Bay. That's all I could say. They, you know, when you talk about the teams still being undefeated, they kind of just fly a little bit under the radar in that category. But yeah, it's a Jennings double, the 7th minute and the 16th minute, and then Ortega with a penalty at the 58th, right before the hour mark. Hey, New Mexico fans, you've played 7 games this season. Don't be all right. 7 games this season, only 2 at home, 2 wins at home. So, and you talk about an away record so far for New Mexico. Away from home, I think they've been 2-1-2, exactly. 2-1-2 away from home, so that's not that bad, right? But good news is that they'll be back home soon. They'll play away at Las Vegas Lights next time around. But then it's back at home, Open Cup action against Real Salt Lake. Then you have Oakland Roots at home and San Antonio FC at home. They've been on the road for quite some time, New Mexico. Give them credit, right? It's not easy when you have to go on the road, but when you have a nice homecoming party, 3 home games in a row, plus you play an out-of-form Las Vegas Lights FC, you know, just losing 6-0, and both teams really getting beaten by the unbeaten teams in the USL, albeit one much more significantly than the other, will be interesting to see if New Mexico can take home as well another win to their record. Las Vegas and then trying to bounce back. I'm curious to see how that game will go next week around. But hey, that was Tampa Bay beating New Mexico 3-0. El Paso Locomotive taking on FC Tulsa. El Paso would lose this one 1-0. FC Tulsa getting the only goal of the game in the 53rd minute from Diallo. Shots on target in this one, 4 for each side. Important clean sheet for FC Tulsa, by the way. They haven't had a clean sheet in 10 matches. You have to go back to last season against Oakland Roots when they had their last clean sheet. Yeah, but for El Paso Locomotive, it's another loss. Oakland Roots taking on Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Speaking of the Oakland Roots, we have the big winners. Colorado with their first win of the season. Tejada with the goal in the 71st and Roca with the goal in the 84th. Massive big breakthrough when you talk about finally getting the win. The Switchbacks, they brought the heat to California. They controlled about 55% of the ball's possession in the first half, and in the 31st minute, you had Christian Herrera making an incredible save with a quick leap to left, blocking Justin Rasmussen's shot by just Herrera's fingertips. With the good guys creating six shots throughout the first half, it was on to see who could score the first goal in the game, and Yosuka Hanya created one last final chance in the 45th minute, but thanks to a long pass from Malik Foster. But the goalkeeper for Oakland Roots, Paul Blanchett, was able to stop the ball from passing the goal line. So going into the second half, the Switchbacks made some substitutions, right? Enriquez came on, Juan Tejada coming onto the pitch for Zach Zandi, and Yosuke Hanya in the 70th. Malik Foster passed the ball over to the left side of the 18, where Juan Tejada tipped the ball right into the net. With the Switchbacks feeling ecstatic, it was time to secure the 3 points for the match. Rocha ran right into the middle of the 18, calmly striking the ball into the right side of the net in the 84th minute, sneaking it past Paul Blanchett. 2-0 for Colorado Springs Switchbacks. That coverage coming from Ashley Perlow. That's on the Colorado Switchbacks official website for the recap there. About 3,500 people in attendance at Pioneer Stadium in support of Oakland Roots. For Orange County Soccer Club, taking on Monterey Bay Soccer Club. Big win here for Orange County. They emerged victorious in the match with a 2-0 scoreline at Championship Stadium in Irvine, California. Early on in the match, Thomas Among scored, putting OCSC in the lead. Despite Monterey's attempts, Colin Shuttler, the goalkeeper for OCSC, made five impressive saves in the first half. In the 82nd minute, Ethan Zuback seals the victory by scoring his first goal. For Orange County, the team displayed a strong defensive game, getting the clean sheet. It'd be the fifth clean sheet of the season, the most actually in the league so far. That information retrieved from an article by Orange County Soccer Club Communications from the website. And for the first time this season, Monterey Bay FC are held scoreless, but they would hit the post in this one twice, so missing two big chances. Could have been, you know, those go in. Talking about a tie game, but 50-50 in terms of the ball possession for both sides, six shots on target each. And yeah, just in terms of how things would go about, it was OCSC reigning supreme in this one. Last game to cover for the rundown of the fixtures, it's Sacramento Republic taking on Loudoun United. This one would end 3-1 in favor of the hosts in front of a capacity crowd of 10,000 fans. Sacramento Republic put on a nice display, 3 goals, 3 points, having 7 shots on target compared to Loudoun United's 3 goals from Cicerone. 10th minute, Phillips with a brace in the 86th and 90-plus second, but Leggett would get a goal for Loudoun United in the 28th, so it was tied going into the half, but it was a late win for Sacramento Republic. This is a 2-game losing streak for Loudoun. Things do not get easier for them as they'll take on Detroit next time around. So taking a look a little bit at the league table so far, Sacramento Republic FC in the Western Conference side of things leading the way there, 18 points from 8 games played. Right behind them, you have Orange County Soccer Club with 15 points, Monterey Bay with 14, then you have New Mexico in 4th with 13, San Antonio in 5th with 12 points, Phoenix Rising sitting now mid-table. After their win against Rhode Island, 3 wins, 1 draw, 4 losses for the 2023 champions. Right behind Phoenix, Las Vegas Lights with 9 points from 8 games played. FC Tulsa having the least amount of games played in the Western Conference with 6. They're 2-2-2. 9 goals scored, 10 goals conceded, but more importantly, 8 points. They having just obviously winning against Las Vegas. Having just won against El Paso. They'll play Birmingham Legion next in an important game, that's for sure, for both sides. Oakland Roots on a 2-game losing streak, sitting in 9th place with 7 points. And then you have Memphis, Colorado, and El Paso as the bottom 3 teams. Memphis with 6 points. Colorado in 11th place in the Western Conference with 4 points. They're actually getting back into form with a draw and win from their previous two. And El Paso Locomotive, it is 2 draws in the season for them. No wins so far. They are the only team to have yet to win a game this season. So Colorado Springs they're out of it now, so they can say, hey, at least we won. For El Paso fans, not the case. They'll play Colorado Springs next time around. You want to talk about a huge game. That is a big one. Colorado Springs taking on El Paso next time around. A bout for the two at the bottom of the Western Conference. Eastern side of things, Charleston Battery, 9 games played, the most out of any team so far in the USL Championship 2024 campaign, but they have 21 points to show for it, 6 wins, 3 draws, back-to-back-to-back-to-back wins, and they'll play Hartford Athletic next at home. Right behind them, though, is Louisville City FC. Where they had their 6-0 win, they have 6 wins as well. 23 goals scored, 7 conceded, only 7 games played, and they have 18 points to show for it. Detroit City FC, we know, right, having their first loss of the season, but prior to that, it was just all wins. 15 points from 6 games, they sit third place. Right behind them is unbeaten Tampa Bay Rowdies. There's only 3 teams left that have yet to lose. That's the Battery, that's Sacramento, and that's Tampa Bay. Don't sleep on them either. They're performing quite well. 16 goals scored, 7 conceded, and they have 13 points from 7 games. Fourth place in the Eastern Conference. Then, middle of the table, we have Birmingham with 10 points. Hartford with 9 points. They're on a 2-game losing streak. Hopefully, they can get something when they play Charleston next time around. Pittsburgh in 7th place, 2 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses. They've been on great form, those back-to-back draws, and now we have back-to-back wins for Pittsburgh, so things look quite steady as they have been steadying the ship. Indy 11 back to winning ways with their 2-1 win over North Carolina, so that puts them on 8 points, tied with Pittsburgh. However, Pittsburgh has a game in hand over Indy 11. Loudoun United FC, 7 games played, 7 points, 2-game losing streak for them at the moment. Miami FC finally getting back to winning ways after many games lost, not doing too well, right? But now with the 2-1 win over San Antonio, they'll play Pittsburgh next time around. At the bottom of the Eastern Conference, you have Rhode Island FC, 7 points, and North Carolina FC with 6 points, and they have yet to win since March 30th. Last time they won when they took on Hartford Athletic. For them, they're also on a 2-game losing streak. Similar to Loudoun United FC, similar to Hartford Athletic, similar to Oakland Roots. And for Las Vegas, it's actually a 3-game losing streak for them. That's how things are looking at the table when you talk about what's coming up next time around. Memphis will host Tampa Bay. That'll be Saturday, May 4th, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific. Then you have Charleston taking on Hartford Athletic at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Pittsburgh taking on Miami, 6 p.m. Eastern. North Carolina FC hosting Rhode Island. 2 bouts, by the way. Pay attention. Mark your calendars. Eastern side of things, Western side of things. Bottom of the table bouts. North Carolina taking on Rhode Island. And then you also have Colorado Springs taking on El Paso. North Carolina, Saturday, May 4th, hosting Rhode Island. Colorado Springs Switchbacks will host El Paso Saturday, May 4th, 8 p.m., 3 Pacific. All right, so then we move on to Loudoun United hosting Detroit City FC, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Birmingham Legion FC hosting FC Tulsa Saturday, May 4th, 6:30 p.m., 3:30 p.m. Pacific. San Antonio FC will host Oakland Roots at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. That'll be at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Monterey Bay hosting Indy 11, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific. And Phoenix Rising taking on the undefeated Sacramento Republic FC. Could this be the chance for Phoenix to really gain some momentum and be back into things, back into the swing of things by handing Sacramento their first loss of the season when they host them that game Saturday, May 4th, 9:30 p.m., 6:30 Pacific. And then finally, we have Las Vegas Lights taking on New Mexico United. That'll be at the same time as Phoenix. That's 9:30 p.m. and 6:30 Pacific. And that will do it for episode 10. So happy to make the double digit landmark milestone, we can say, for Talk USL. It's been a blast so far. It's been a great season, and you can really never predict what's going to happen, which is what I love about it, the unpredictability of USL Championship. We have some really, really juicy matches coming up, but really big winners and big losers from match day 8. Congratulations, Colorado, for getting their first win of the season. Miami's back to winning ways. Tampa Bay, you're still undefeated, man. Louisville at Charleston, they're saying, yeah, we're top dogs in the Eastern Conference, and we'll show you by putting multiple goals in the game for 6-0 wins, respectively, for each of them. And then, yeah, you just have more, right? Rhode Island, unfortunately, losing their first home game. Phoenix getting back into form. They play Sacramento next summer. I can just keep going on and on and on and on about what's going to happen and what we can look forward to as the season rolls on. But that'll do it for us today in this 10th episode edition on April 29th, Monday. Hey, it's been All Talk, All USL. Talk USL, covering all the latest scores, news, and developments in the second highest division, United States Men's Professional Soccer System, the USL Championship. Please leave a review if you like the show, right? Whatever you want, reach out to me at TalkUSL on socials. More importantly, TalkUSLChampionship@gmail.com. Love to hear your feedback on the show. I'll give you my responses and maybe give you a couple of shout outs as well on the show. We'll talk soon, everybody. Bye for now.